And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, it is January 15th. 15th day of the year. 350 days remain until this year's over with. We'll see what the next week brings. Had a runny nose today. On this day in history, in the year 69, Otho seizes power in Rome, proclaims himself the Emperor of Rome. He reigns for only 3 months. 1541, King Francis I of France gives Jean-Francois Barbervale a commission to settle the province of New France, that was Canada, and provide for the spread of the Holy Catholic faith. 1559, Elizabeth I is crowned Queen of England in Westminster Abbey. 1582, the Truce of Jan-Zapolski. Russia cedes Livonia to the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. In 1759, the British Museum opens to the public. 1777, the American Revolutionary War. New Connecticut, present-day Vermont, declares its independence. 1782, Superintendent of Finance Robert Morris addresses U.S. Congress to recommend establishment of a national mint and decimal coinage. 1815, War of 1812. The American frigate USS President, commanded by Commodore Stephen Decatur, is captured by a squadron of four British frigates. That wasn't a good thing. 1818. A paper by David Brewster is read to the Royal Society, belatedly announcing his discovery of what we now call the biaxial class of doubly refracting crystals. On that same day, Augustin Jean Fresnel signs a supplement on reflection of polarized light. That was submitted 4 days later. 1822, the Greek War of Independence. Demetrius Ipsilantis is elected president of the Legislative Assembly. 1865, American Civil War. Fort Fisher, North Carolina, falls to the Union. That cuts off the last major seaport of the Confederacy. It was all over but the shouting by that time, anyway. 1867, 40 people die when ice covering the boating lake at Regent's Park in London collapses. You shouldn't party on top of a iced-over lake. 1870, a political cartoon for the first time symbolizes the Democratic Party with a donkey. A live jackass kicking a dead lion was done by Thomas Nast for Harper's Weekly. 1876, the first newspaper in Afrikaans, the Afrikaans Patriot, is published at Parel. 1889, the Coca-Cola Company, then known as the Pemberton Medicine Company, is incorporated in Atlanta. Dr. Pemberton came up with the formula for Coca-Cola. Originally, I'm told, it contained some cocaine. 1892, James Naismith publishes The Rules of Basketball. I'm sure he never thought it would become a place for the wealthy to hang around, run up and down the court wearing shorts. 1908. The Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority becomes the first Greek letter organization founded and established by African American college women. 1910, construction ends on the Buffalo Bill Dam in Wyoming, which was the highest dam in the world at that point in time. It was 325 feet tall. 1911, Palestinian Arabic language Philistin newspaper founded. 1919, Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht two most prominent socialists in Germany are tortured and murdered by the Freikorps at the end of the Spartacus uprising. The Freikorps was former members of the German military after World War I. 1919, the Great Molasses Flood. A wave of molasses, of all things, released from an exploding storage tank sweeps through Boston, Massachusetts. 21 people were killed, 150 are injured, and several people gained a lot of weight, eating their way out of the molasses. Now, I will tell you, molasses is excellent. It is outstanding, especially on freshly cooked biscuits. That was a southern delicacy, don't you know? 1934, an 8.0 Nepal-Bihar earthquake strikes Nepal and Bihar with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 11. That's considered extreme. Kills an estimated 6,000 to 10,700 people. 1936, the first building to be completely covered in glass, built for the Owens, Illinois Glass Company, is completed in Toledo, Ohio. 1937, Spanish Civil War. Nationalist and Republican both withdraw after suffering heavy losses, ending the Second Battle of the Corona Road. 1943, World War II. Soviet counteroffensive at Voronezh begins. 1943, the Pentagon is dedicated in Arlington, Virginia. 1947, the Black Dahlia murder took place. The dismembered corpse of Elizabeth Short was found in a vacant lot in Los Angeles. That has never been solved, by the way. 1949, Chinese Civil War. Communist forces take over Tianjin from the nationalist government. 1962, the Derveni Papyrus, Europe's oldest surviving manuscript dating to 340 BC, is found in northern Greece. 1962, the Netherlands-New Guinea conflict. Indonesian Navy fast patrol boat R.I. Makantutu, commanded by Commodore Jos Sudarso, sunk in the Arafura Sea by the Dutch Navy. 1966, the first Nigerian Republic, led by Abubakar Tafawa Balilua, is overthrown in a military coup d'etat. 1967, the first Super Bowl is played in Los Angeles. Green Bay Packers defeat the Kansas City Chiefs 35-10. 1969, that wasn't a defeat, that was a rout. 1969, the Soviet Union launches Soyuz 5. 1970, Nigerian Civil War. Biafran rebels surrender following an unsuccessful 32-month fight for independence from Nigeria. 1970, Muammar Gaddafi is proclaimed premier of Libya. He was a colonel when he took over. 1973, Vietnam War. Set in progress in peace negotiations, President Nixon announces the suspension of offensive action in North Vietnam. What he never seemed to understand is they were willing to make progress in the peace negotiations because they couldn't handle the offensive against them. In 1975, the Alvor Agreement is signed, ends the Angolan War of Independence, gives Angola independence from Portugal. 1976, Gerald Ford's would-be assassin, Sarah Jane Moore, a member of the Manson family, is sentenced to life in prison. 1981, Pope John Paul II receives a delegation from Solidarity, that was the Polish trade union at the Vatican. Lech Wałęsa led the delegation. 1991, United Nations deadline for the withdrawal of Iraqi forces from occupied Kuwait expires. Prepares the way for the start of Operation Desert Storm. I was threatened with recall for that. They wanted me to lead a training battalion. It never came to pass. 1991, Elizabeth II, in her capacity as Queen of Australia, signs letters patent allowing Australia to become the first Commonwealth realm to institute its own Victoria Cross and its honor system. Before that, only the Queen could give the Victoria Cross. 2001, Wikipedia, a free wiki content encyclopedia, goes online. 2005, ESA's Smart One Luna Orbiter discovers elements such as calcium, aluminum, silicon, iron, and other surface elements on the moon. 2009, U.S. Airways Flight 1549 ditches safely in the Hudson River after the plane collides with birds less than 2 minutes after takeoff. This particular crash became known as the Miracle on the Hudson. All 155 people on board were rescued. 2013, a train carrying Egyptian army recruits derails in Gaza, in Greater Cairo, kills 19, injures 120 more. 2015, the Swiss National Bank abandons the cap on the franc's value relative to the euro, which causes turmoil in international financial markets. 2016, the Kenyan army suffers its worst defeat ever in a battle with Al-Shabaab, Islamic insurgents in El Adi in Somalia. Estimated 150 Kenyan soldiers are killed in the battle. 2019, Somali militants attack the Dusit D2 Hotel in Nairobi, Kenya. Kills 21 and injures 19. And in 2019, Theresa May's UK government suffers the biggest governmental defeat in modern times when 432 members of parliament vote against the proposed European Union withdrawal agreement, giving her opponents a majority of 230. Okay, let's see what else. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays observances. It's Arbor Day in Egypt. I didn't know they had arbors there. Armed Forces Day in Nigeria. Army Day in India. Christian Feast Day at Belazus, the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church, Arnold Janssen, Francis Ferdinand de Capias, one of the martyrs, saints of China, Ita, Our Lady of the Poor, Macarius of Egypt and Western Christianity, Marius and Placidus in the Order of St. Benedict, Paul the Hermit. Earliest day on which Martin Luther King Jr. Day can fall, the 15th is his birthday. January 21st is the latest, celebrated on the third Monday in January in the U.S. Earliest day in which Sinu Log Festival can fall, January 21st is the latest, usually celebrated on the third Sunday in January in the Philippines. John Chilimbwe Day in Malawi, Korean Alphabet Day in North Korea, Ocean Duty Day in Indonesia, Sakichio at Tasurugawata, Hachimango in Kamakura, Japan. Teacher's Day in Venezuela. Second day of the Sidereal Winter Solstice Festival in India. And Thai Pongal. That's the Tamil Harvest Festival. Okay, let's see what else we might have. Okay, in 588 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar II of Babylon lays siege to Jerusalem under Zedekiah's reign. That siege lasted until July 23rd, 586 B.C. In 708, Sisinnius begins his reign as pope. He died under mysterious circumstances 20 days later. 946, Caliph Al-Mustafik, blinded and ousted. 1346, Emperor Louis IV of Bavaria gives his wife Margaretha Holland and Zeeland. 1535, on this date, Henry VIII declared himself head of the Church of England. I guess if the Pope can declare himself the head of the Catholic Church, the King of England can declare himself head of the Church of England. In 1562, the third sitting of the Council of Trent opens. 1582, Russia cedes Livonia and Estonia to Poland, which loses its access to the Baltic. 1586, the Battle of Moxum. Spanish troops under Tussis beat the state army. 1752, Tobias Smollett publishes a pamphlet accusing Henry Fielding of plagiarism. 1754, there was a riot at the burial of the Orangist leader Daniel Rep in Amsterdam. 1762, Francis Tavern opens in New York City. That was a very famous tavern. If I'm not mistaken, George Washington said goodbye to his troops at Francis Tavern. Or at least his officers. 1780, the American Continental Congress establishes the Court of Appeals. 1797, the first top hat was worn by John Etherington of London. It was considered a terrifying hat, and it caused a great sensation. It wasn't really accepted until Prince Albert, the husband of Queen Victoria, obtained one and wore it. 1831, the first U.S.-built locomotive to pull a passenger train makes its maiden run. 1832, the first U.S. railroad honeymoon trip by Mr. and Mrs. Pearson out of Charleston, South Carolina, took place. 1844, on this date, the University of Notre Dame gets its charter in Indiana. 1847, the first Swedish magazine to be published in the U.S. called Scandinavia, S-K-A-N. Is published in New York City. 1851, General Mariano Rista replaces Mexican President Jose Joaquin de Herrera. Herrera is buried here in El Paso. 1861, the steam elevator is patented by Elisha Otis. Good thing about that, I guess, is after you take your trip, you can also warm yourself up. 1882, the first U.S. ski club forms in Berlin, New Hampshire. 1886, the Weekly Herald, the first newspaper in Vancouver, British Columbia, publishes its first issue. 1895, the French fleet gets to Mahunga in Madagascar. 1902, Abdulaziz Ibn Saud leads 40 men over the walls of Riyadh and takes the city with 40 men, marking the beginning of the third Saudi state. And he's actually credited with being the founder of Saudi Arabia. 1907, gold dental inlays were first described by William Taggart, the man who invented them. So if you had gold inlays and you fell asleep with your mouth open, you could be robbed. 1911, the first airplane bombing experiments with explosives took place at San Francisco. 1915, Japan claims economic control of China. And the great molasses flood that I mentioned, that was 2 million gallons of molasses that flooded through the streets of Boston. Drowned 21 people. Now, how would that be on your headstone? Drowned in molasses. Injured 150. Okie dokie. Well, I think we've done enough history for today. I mean, how can you follow up on the molasses flood? Well, let's talk about more Civil War ghosts. How about the Battle of Vicksburg, Vicksburg, Mississippi? Now, Grant understood taking Vicksburg would be a bloody battle. So he decided he was going to lay siege to the city. Now, the Confederate forces, as well as the citizens of Vicksburg, underwent 47 days of hell before finally surrendering to the Northern forces on July 4th. The Union suffered about 5,000 casualties during the battle, or the siege, rather, but the Confederates had 32,000 casualties. So having taken Vicksburg, the North now held the Mississippi River and controlled the western front of the war, and pretty much laid the basis for the end of the Civil War with a Union victory. But once the war was over, it was going to take decades for the city of Vicksburg to recover from the horrors that took place during the siege. There are a lot of homes in Vicksburg today with ghost stories, and there are a few surprises to be found within the Vicksburg National Military Park. Most of the paranormal encounters that occur include strange mist and misty figures that seem to float around the woods, and the battle sounds that emanate from thin air, and on occasion you see ghost lights that bob along the ground and disappear when you investigate. Now, there are quite a few people who have reported seeing these things, though, so the odds of, if you go, encountering ghosts are relatively good. Hot spots inside the military park seem to be the area around the Stockade Redan attack and the Graveyard Road, Fort Hill and the Battery, DeGoya, and the Shirley House region. But make sure you bring a camera. You never know what you're going to see. Now, as I said yesterday, there were 10 battles that accounted for the majority of the hauntings. But there were a lot of smaller skirmishes that you'll find in any small armed conflict that history is attributed with unique names. And some of these clashes racked up thousands of casualties. Others may only have involved a few. Either way, they're listed because they're now visited for their individual ghost stories and the history associated with them. Sometimes these places have a small park to note their occurrence. Other times it may be just be a simple plaque marking the spot where the battle took place. One thing is certain, though, the crowds will be smaller than a lot of these. And chances of seeing some solitary ghost wandering around could be higher. We're going to start out with Garfield, Arkansas, and the Battle of Pea Ridge. This is remembered as the battle that saved Missouri for the Union. It was a battle between Union Brigadier General Samuel Ryan Curtis and Confederate Major General Earl Van Dorn. It took place on March 6, 1862. Now, Missouri was a very contentious state, with both sides wanting the territory to help lock down the Mississippi. Now, that was a major logistical boon. Union troops had already driven out the Confederate Missouri State Guard under the command of Major General Sterling Price, and so if the North was able to drive the rebels deep into Arkansas, they could essentially own that entire territory. And ultimately, it would take 3 days and over 3,300 casualties for the North to win, with the Confederate troops retreating along the Huntsville Road deeper into Arkansas. If you go to Pea Ridge National Military Park and learn all about the battle, park employees are quite accustomed to tourists who are ghost enthusiasts, so they can probably tell you firsthand stories about their encounters on the grounds. Now, most of the reports from witnesses about ghosts include the standard Civil War ghostly activity, the cries of soldiers, cannons firing, and moans of the wounded. And there's also the occasional sighting of a misty figure seen on the battlefield from time to time. Beyond this, you might want to spend some time at the reenactment of the famous Elkhorn Tavern. It was a strategic location during the battle, and a local paranormal enthusiast claimed that this is the most active hot spot in the park. Visitors to the structure reported hearing the beating of drums, the cadence of marching soldiers, and what sounds like a boisterous commander barking orders to his troops. From this, we move to Leola, Arkansas, the Battle of Jenkins Ferry. Now, after losing strategic clashes at March Mills and the town of Camden, Major General Frederick Steele began crossing his Union troops over the St. Lion River via the Jenkins Ferry. A day later, a Confederate force arrived under the command of General E. Kirby Smith, and the real challenge became getting all the Union soldiers across the river ahead of the bullets. Major General Sterling Price and his two divisions of infantry soldiers had been pursuing the Union Army through Arkansas and was adamant about preventing them from reaching the city of Little Rock. Once General Steele came under attack at the rear from General Smith's soldiers, it became a race against time to get his troops across the river to safety, not to mention all the supplies, weapons, and ammunition and what have you that was part of the unit. And thanks to the thick smoke from all the spent gunpowder, a fog had settled in, and the horribly muddy conditions made moving across the river a bloody task indeed. Over 1,700 casualties quickly accrued before the Union Army managed to cross and escape on their way to Little Rock. Though retreating sounds like a loss, getting the Northern soldiers safely to the heavily fortified positions at Little Rock was a huge gain for General Steele. But the battle had no victory for those who died, including the family that said to have been killed in the crossfire. Visitors to the Jenkins Ferry Battleground State Park reported seeing a few wandering spirits on the grounds. Spirits who appear to be civilians and possibly even a single family. The ghosts include an older male, the father, an older female, the mother, and two children. More often than not, the ghost is reported by witnesses to be a small child who is wandering aimlessly through the area. But on occasion, other apparitions are seen as well, with the matriarch of the family reputedly being heard pleading for help. Then we have Prairie Grove, Arkansas. Date was December 7th, 1862. Confederate troops were desperate. With their hold on the states of Missouri and Arkansas all but finished, Major General Thomas Hindman knew he had to prevent the two Union forces under Brigadier General Francis Herron and Brigadier General James Blunt from combining into one massive, unstoppable army. With this in mind, he moved his troops between the two and quickly attacked General Herron's cavalry. Now, that move was successful till the Union infantry pushed back the Confederate soldiers, and knowing it was only a matter of time until the two opposing forces would strike him, General Hindman had his troops dig in at Prairie Grove. Because of an almost constant barrage of artillery, the Confederate general managed to stave off the bulk of the attack from General Herron. But when his left flank came under fire from the newly arrived men under General Blunt, it was only a matter of time till the Southern troops would fall. So when night came, the rebels quickly moved from the area, retreating to Van Buren and leaving northwest Arkansas in the hands of the Union Army. More than 2,500 casualties fell there, and the Prairie Grove Battlefield State Park today stands as a constant reminder of this particular battle. With lots of outdoor activities to do, hiking, boating, hang gliding, just to name a few, the park is a great place to visit for the day. But what happens when the sun goes down? Well, let's just say you may not be the only visitors there. There have been a lot of tales of disembodied voices, the apparition of soldiers, and the phantom gunfire regularly reported from the site. Most of these eyewitness accounts come from the battlefield areas of the park. But you might also want to go over near the old Borden house and see what you can find out. During the battle, the Borden family took shelter in a nearby cellar. When they returned after the fighting, their house had been burned to the ground. The surrounding landscape was littered with bodies. They built another home at the same location, and now many claim that this spot's a paranormal center for Prairie Grove. And certainly the number of reports that have come from witnesses is somewhat mind-boggling. Well, from Arkansas, let's turn to Florida. Olustee, Florida, to be exact. Known as the largest, bloodiest Civil War battle in the entire state of Florida, the Battle of Olustee is commemorated today at the Olustee Battlefield Historic State Park. The fight occurred February 20th, 1864, when Major General Quincy Gilmore marched federal troops into Florida. Now, he was sent with several objectives: create a Union stronghold in the state, cut off Confederate supply lines, recruit African-American men to join in the fight. Union soldiers marched along quite well until troops under Brigadier General Truman Seymour encountered a rebel force entrenched near the small town of Olustee. Southern force, headed by Brigadier General Joseph Finnegan, fought like madmen to repel the Yankees, and they did successfully drive the Union Army away. With just over 2,800 casualties, the battle would force the North to hole up in the city of Jacksonville and wait to the end of the war. Regular entrenchments and activities and reenactments, the park is a wonderful place to visit. Even the ghostly activity at this location is relatively tame, with just one exception. Most ghostly encounters are of the residual nature, battle shouts and gunfire. But during a reenactment a few years ago, one of the participants reported running into a spectral Union soldier who knocked the unsuspecting man from horseback. When he got back to his feet, the apparition was gone. Well, you have a little difficulty blaming the apparition for what he did, because the reenactor he attacked was dressed as a Confederate soldier. So at some level, the battle still continues. Then in Cartersville, Georgia, we have the Battle of Allatoona Pass. On October 5th, 1864, Major General Samuel French attacked a Union garrison that was protecting a local train station and logistics operation. Staunchly defended by Brigadier General John Corse, however, so the Confederates were driven away. Casualties numbered just over 1,500. Once the Civil War was over, the trains continued to run through the area, but it wouldn't be long before a lonely spirit would be seen wandering along the tracks. For years after the war, railroaders who worked the line along the Allatoona Pass would notice a mysterious black figure riding on top of the train cars. When he was approached, he'd disappear. Now, this led many to believe the entity was actually a ghost, probably a soldier killed during the fighting. One train conductor in particular went to great pains to figure out who the mysterious train ghost might be, but didn't have any luck. He'd see the apparition, approach him to collect a fare, and find him gone. When he returned to the engine and looked back, he'd see that figure right where he'd been the first time when he tried to approach him. Well, the stretch of train tracks where the spirit said to appear now goes through the Allatoona Pass battlefield. Nearby is a lonely grave that's been fenced off with a sign perched nearby that says, "Unknown Hero." It said that a mysterious and decayed corpse was found at a local railroad depot just after the battle that nobody could identify. Presumed to be the casualty of the fighting, the corpse was taken to the battlefield and buried. Visitors to the site today say that the temperature will often drop and a mysterious ball of light will then appear and roam the area surrounding that grave. You know, the dead do not always rest peacefully. Then in Dallas, Georgia, we have the Battle of New Hope Church. Part of a series of battles between General Joseph Johnston and Major General Sherman, the Battle of New Hope Church, which took place May 25th and 26th, 1864, was a valiant effort on the part of the Confederates to keep Sherman from advancing further into his campaign to march to the sea. Skirmish claimed just over 2,000 casualties and was dubbed one of the bloodiest affairs due to the vicious assault the rebels made on the Northern soldiers and one of the giant ravines at the site now known as the Hell Hole. There's a small plaque that resides in front of the current New Hope Church along Highway 381 that gives the entire story. After you check out that monument, you may want to swing over to the Hell Hole if you want to check out the ghostly activity. Many people have heard moaning, voices, screams, and cries of pain at this location, especially if there's a thunderstorm in the area. There are researchers who believe the static electricity produced during a storm can elevate ghostly activity, though there is no record of a storm occurring during the battle. And you may want to check out the area nearby where the Confederate flag flies on display next to a few tombstones. Many say the spirit of a Southern soldier is often seen here. The entity is known as the Sentry or the Ghost Sentry and is said to appear before the astonished eyes of onlookers. If you approach him, of course, he fades away. Then we have the Battle of Kennesaw Mountain. It took place at Kennesaw, Georgia. Though this battle is tied to the Battle of Culb's Farm, it also has its own unique ghost stories. The clash actually occurred less than a week after the fighting at Culb's Farm started when General Joseph Johnston withdrew his southern force to the mountains to dig trenches and erect battlements. Union Major General William Sherman had just beaten the army under Lieutenant General John B. Hood at Culb's Farm, and it wasn't long before he knew where General Johnston had taken his forces. June 27, 1864, General Sherman marched his troops against a heavily fortified position of General Johnston on Kennesaw Mountain. Now, this warfare was brutal and bloody. Sherman actually said it was the hardest fight of the campaign up to that date. There were over 4,000 casualties as the Union forces attempted to dislodge the rebels from their position. Ultimately, the Confederates won and forced the Union force to withdraw. The Kennesaw Mountain National Battlefield Park is a gorgeous locale to visit. It does seem that the typical Civil War spirit activity is there. You can hear the sounds of warfare and see misty figures. But this particular battlefield has a unique ghost story as well, something that's rarely spoken of when discussing the casualties of the American Civil War, and that's the amount of wildlife that was most likely caught in the crossfire. Apparently one such member of the wild was gunned down during this battle, and he decided he's going to stick around. Several eyewitnesses' accounts of a ghost deer have been reported from the Kennesaw Mountain Park. Those who see it say it simply stands and watches as they approach it, and then when they're within a dozen feet or so from the deer, it simply vanishes. Both accounts of the ghost deer describe the animal spirit as being a pale gray in color, but otherwise looking just like a living deer. As for the other ghosts wandering the park, you may want to check out the area known as Cheatham Hill. Seems to be a hot spot for spying apparitions and hearing the voices of the dead. Then in Marietta, Georgia, which is not far from Kennesaw, you have the Battle of Culb's Farm that I just referenced. This was yet another battle in the east between General Joseph E. Johnston and Major General William T. Sherman. This particular battle specifically pitted the might of the Union Major General Joseph Hooker against the stalwart Lieutenant General John Bell Hood. Hood had a leg amputated. He had to be tied into the saddle. Understanding General Sherman to be marching on Kennesaw Mountain, the Southern commander prepared his forces for the attack. Unfortunately, General Hood had decided to attack the Union troops without any intelligence or reconnaissance, and as a result, his troops would be slaughtered in the process. Over 1,500 Confederates were counted as casualties, and the Federals lost only 350. The Cold Creek Farm is within view of the entire battle, and it's still standing today in the Kennesaw Mountain National Battlefield Park. When the warfare first began, the Cold family fled the premises and returned to the 1880s. General Hooker actually used the home as a headquarters after the Battle of Culb's Farm. Home is exquisitely preserved and on display along with many other sites in this awesome park. But don't look for ghosts at Culb's Farm. It's an entirely different area that's said to be plagued with the spirits left behind from the battle. Nearby Cold Bridge Court subdivision said to have been built on part of the battlefield that's not included in the national park. A number of residents there have reported seeing the apparitions of soldiers standing in the street or in their yard. And one family's gone on record to tell many tales regarding a particular Civil War era spirit that's haunting their home. So if you want to... After you explore the battlefield, you might want to take a stroll through the neighboring subdivision. Never know what you came about. You know, a little note of interest. General Hooker was well known in the American Civil War, and so much so that the camp followers that followed his troops were given his name. If you ever wondered how prostitutes became known as hookers, it's because of the fact that so many of them followed General Hooker's troops through the Civil War. Now let's talk about Perryville, Kentucky, and the Battle of Perryville. The Perryville Battlefield State Historic Site's one of the most pristine battle sites in all of America. And even without the ghost, it's a fantastic trip. Early in the war, October 8, 1862, General Bragg marched his Confederate troops into Kentucky. He was hoping to coax the neutral state into siding with the South. He thought he could win over the locals as well as possibly divert some of the Union troops away from Chattanooga and Vicksburg. Well, the state of Kentucky refused to join the South, but the move did draw the ire of Union General Major General Don Carlos Buell. General Buell was forced to withdraw from Tennessee in order to confront the rebels, and the largest culmination of this took place in Perryville. The battle caused just over 7,500 casualties and forced the Southern troops to withdraw back into East Tennessee via the Cumberland Gap. Aftermath of this battle rages on in the form of paranormal activity in the area. It's said that the Chaplain River ran red with the amount of blood that was poured into it from the wounded, so it seems quite logical that this is the hottest of hotspots in the park. The sounds of gunshots, battle cries, and marching songs can be heard there, and frankly in other parts of the park as well. And after you spend some time at this location, check out the historic Dye House, which is nearby. The house belonged to John Dye and was used as a field hospital during the Battle of Perryville. Many believe that the house is haunted by Perry spirits who passed away from wounds obtained during the battle. Paranormal investigators have visited this spot a number of times with claims of electronic voice phenomena and disembodied voices being captured on audio recorders. The house isn't open to the public during the visit. You might want to pay attention to the official website for the Perryville Battlefield. The park offers paranormal tours for those who really want to see the ghost of the area. Then we have Boonesboro, Maryland, Battle of South Mountain, also known as the Battle of Boonesboro Gap. This particular battle happened September 14, 1862. General Robert E. Lee was rolling along after a successful campaign at the Second Manassas when he decided it was time to invade the North by marching into the state of Maryland. With only half his force in tow, General Jackson took the other half west to attempt to capture a federal arsenal at Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. Lee moved to the trio of passes along the South Mountain as his entry point into the state. Unfortunately for him, there was a bit of a problem. It seems a copy of his orders had managed to find its way into the desk of Union Major General George B. McClellan. So he knew the Confederate plans, and he was quick to mobilize his force to intercept the rebels at the three passes, Crampton's Gap, Turner's Gap, and Fox's Gap. Now, Lee ultimately figured out there'd been an intelligence leak, so they were forced to withdraw from the area and accept defeat. Casualties topped 4,500 during that affair. Today, you can learn more about the battle by visiting the Washington Monument State Park, where the headquarters for the South Mountain State Battlefield are located. As for the ghosts associated with this, they're located in a few spots across the area. Now, the oldest stories of paranormal events dates back to the late 1800s, not long after the end of the war. Some guests were staying at the South Mountain House, now known as the Old South Mountain Inn, located at Turner's Gap, and were exploring the location when they heard what sounded like a battle taking place just over the hill. According to the account, they heard the neighing of horses, men yelling, cannon firing. Well, they decided that they would exercise the better part of valor, and they ran and relayed their experience to the owner of the house. No, but it doesn't report his response. Another well-known ghostly tale actually involves a similar incident close to Fox's Gap. A group of hikers were making their way through the park when they saw what could be described as a massive residual haunting. Or, frankly, it could even have been a portal opening through time. When they looked below them, just down the hill, there was an entire army making camp for the night. They said there were fires for cooking, people walking the area, horses were being picketed. Now, not knowing what to make of all this, they continued their hike. Later on, they learned that there was no army of reenactors in the area, so there was never an explanation arrived at as to what they had seen. And there's a third story, even if the subject is a bit controversial. It involves a farmer and his family who live close to the battlefield. His name was Daniel Wise, and he was accused by locals of being a rather gruesome individual. After the battle, Union soldiers were tasked with burying all the dead. Many locals were recruited to help. Well, legend states that Daniel Wise is one of those workers who was hired to help bury all the dead. For every corpse that was buried, the worker would get a single dollar. The Wise farm was littered with corpses, so Daniel stood to make a pretty penny out of the deal. But rather than dig a grave for the poor souls who died, he tossed them all down an unfinished well and collected his money. Not long after this took place, Daniel Wise began to get a unique visitor in the evenings. The spirit of a Confederate soldier who was quite angry at having his body thrown down the well. You know, the ghost story wraps up with Wise coming to his senses and reburying the soldiers the proper way. But the ancestors of the Wise family say it was actually Union soldiers who mistreated the Southern dead. And they tried to lay the blame on Daniel, who had fled the area prior to the battle. Well, whatever version of this you want to believe, witnesses say there's the angry ghost of the soldier still wanders the area around the old Wise farm. I don't think he really cared who threw his body down the well. Now let's talk about the Battle of Tupelo, Mississippi. Major General Sherman made his infamous march to the sea. His supply lines were in constant danger of Confederate attack. And so it was that on July 11, 1864, Major General A.J. Smith marched over 14,000 men from LaGrange, Tennessee, into Mississippi. His job was to protect the railroad lines that supplied the federal troops in Georgia. Union forces first stopped in the town of Pontotoc before continuing on to Tupelo. That time, Tupelo was known as Gum Pond. Meanwhile, Major General Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was famous for saying, "Who gets there firstest with the mostest wins," and one of the fathers of the KKK, as it's originally structured, was nearby in the town of Okolona. But he was forced to wait on additional troops from Lieutenant General Stephen D. Lee before advancing on the Northern soldiers. Confederate Army finally moved against the Yankees July 14th with a series of quick attacks that were repelled. After sustaining 1,300 casualties, the Federals only lost 648, General Lee ordered the Southern force to retreat back to the city of Memphis. Tupelo National Battlefield today is a small square park in the middle of downtown Tupelo. If you want information about the battle, you have to visit the Natchez Trace Parkway Visitor Center since there are no facilities on the battlefield itself. Well, what you'll find there is a few cannons on display, a large monument that's said to be haunted by a solitary spirit, and a series of signs that explain the battle. Over the years, visitors to the park have reported seeing and photographing a misty figure that hangs out at the monument. Since the park is in the middle of town, it's easily accessible, and staking out the monument with a camera is quite doable. And although the park is closed after dark, it's so small it could even be watched from afar during the night. And you probably won't get any EVPs or audio there, though, since traffic drives right by the park. Then in Republic, Missouri, we have the Battle of Wilson's Creek, known as the first major fight west of the Mississippi River. The Battle of Wilson's Creek was the culmination of Brigadier General Nathan Lyon's efforts to keep Missouri in the Union. Having forced the governor's hand and taken the capital city of Jefferson City, Missouri, Lyon was stationed with his troops in the southern city of Springfield. The governor, along with the Confederate allied Missouri State Guard, had already taken shelter in southwest Missouri. So the stage was set for a major battle of epic proportions. The date was August 10, 1861, when General Lyon's troops met southern soldiers commanded by Brigadier General Ben McCulloch, Wilson's Creek. Throughout the day, Confederate troops moved against the Federals on a bluff now known as Bloody Hill. General Lyon would be killed in that battle, the first Union general to be killed in the Civil War, and ultimately both sides would withdraw, tattered and exhausted. Union troops retreated to Springfield, leaving the rebels too tired to pursue. There were over 2,200 casualties reported in that battle. These days, the Wilson Creek National Battlefield is quite popular with ghost hunters. There are tales of spectral soldiers on the field. People reported hearing the sounds of battle, eerie cries from the woods. And if you make that trip to this particular battle site, you might want to hit a few recognized hotspots. One popular spot to stake out spirits is Bloody Hill, of course. It's one of the better places to do some EVP and audio work. Several paranormal groups have gotten some great recordings from this location. Another popular place is the old Ray House that's stationed on the east side of the park. When the fighting broke out, the Ray family took shelter in their cellar. When they came out, they found their home had been converted into a field hospital. Many people died under the knife in that house. The body of General Lyon was laid out there for a bit. Visitors to the Ray House reported hearing the moans of the dying, and they feel roaming cold spots. Well, let's talk about the Battle of Bentonville. It took place in Bentonville, North Carolina. After the famous march by Major General William T. Sherman to the sea, Union troops veered into the Carolinas to assist General Grant with the destruction of the Confederate Army of Northern Virginia. It was thought that the Southern supply lines could be destroyed by General Sherman, which would aid the fighting to the north. Eventually, the Union soldiers crossed into North Carolina, and on March 19, 1865, they encountered the entrenched troops of General Joseph E. Johnston in Bentonville. Over 4,000 casualties came from that battle. Today, they're memorialized in the Bentonville Battleground State Historic Site. And as for the ghostly activity, it's said there's a lot of residual type occurrences happening on almost a weekly basis. Many visitors have heard gunshots and battle cries and screams of the wounded and even cannon fire. A lot of activity seems to occur around nearby Harper's House. There's more stories about the Harper House that we'll talk about later. It's now a combination living museum and display of a typical field hospital that would have existed during the Civil War. As you wander around this historic site, make sure you keep your tape recorder running. Never know what you're going to pick up. And in Jefferson County, Texas, we have the Battle of Sabine Pass. This was an attempt by U.S. Navy Lieutenant Frederick Crocker to invade Texas. It's been noted as one of the most one-sided victories in the entire American Civil War. Unfortunately for Lieutenant Crocker, his victory belonged to his Confederate rivals. On September 8, 1863, Lieutenant Crocker pushed four gunboats into Texas up the Sabine River. He moved confidently, knowing they'd be followed by seven Navy transports full of soldiers. Things went a little off the rails, though, when the gunboats came into view of Fort Griffin. Placed in the fort for punishment, the small force of 46 men had spent many hours practicing their artillery skills, and those skills paid off in the biggest way. When the first gunboat, the Sachem, came into view, it was quickly targeted. And the second gunboat, the Clifton, got the same treatment. The other two ships decided to hang back, realizing they'd just be moving into the same gunfire that took out the previous boats. Ultimately, they completely withdraw. And that's how a force of 46 Confederates managed to whip a Union force of over 5,000. The men were Fort Griffin were praised by all in the South and were dubbed the Jefferson Davis Guards. All given medals and legends of what they had done still live today. But as is usually the case with stories of this type, there's a second legend as well. Of the men killed on the gunboats, one sailor was completely decapitated by a cannonball. And although a local marker names those who were killed in the battle, and it's worth noting that it was actually the second battle to happen at this place, it's unclear which of the men lost his head during the fighting. Well, whoever it might have been, it's claimed he's still looking for his head. For decades, locals have stated that the headless spirit of that sailor were emerged from the Sabine River on nights of a full moon and walked the area, clearly searching for something. They say you'll know he's approaching when you hear a low moaning in the wind and a sudden chill in the air. Well, Middletown, Virginia, the Battle of Cedar Creek. October 19, 1864. Confederate troops under the command of Lieutenant General Jubal Early stumbled upon three corps of Union soldiers in the area of Cedar Creek. He managed to drive them from the area, but the Federals returned in the direction of Major General Philip Sheridan. Thanks to a dense fog that surrounded the area, the Union force was able to oust the rebels from their newly gained ground. The Southern soldiers, who were now exhausted and starving, fled the area. With more than 8,500 casualties, the surprise battle was far bloodier than either general could have anticipated or wanted. The Cedar Creek and Belgrove National Historic Park has a wonderful tour of the grounds, and you can check out the neighboring Belgrove Battlefield as well. Now, there are several ghost stories associated with this location, but there's not one particular spot where they seem to have happened. Paranormal activity has certainly been reported throughout the park and even includes the areas around the town of Middletown where some of the battle took place. The most common ghost story revolves around the music of a military band. Sounds of a drum beating and a tune playing have been heard in several spots in the park, sometimes accompanied by the shouts of men and gunfire. Sometimes just the gunfire is heard. In addition to this, the apparitions of soldiers have been seen in the area as well. Usually it's a solitary figure. It seems to be a Confederate soldier, but at times it can be said to be a few soldiers marching along the road. So if you tour the park, you need to keep your eyes open. Never know what you're going to see. Then in Randolph, Virginia, we have the Battle of Staunton River. Staunton River Battlefield State Park offers a lot of events throughout the year to commemorate the skirmish that occurred at this location. June 25th, 1864, Captain Benjamin L. Farenholt learned that a massive force of over 5,000 federal troops were en route to capture the Richmond and Danville Railroad Station, as well as the local bridge across Staunton River. He had only 296 soldiers, and with those he defended the bridge and waited for the Union Army to arrive. Fortunately, he got the additional support of 642 men at the last minute to assist with that battle. Through a clever ruse, Captain Farenholt was able to convince Union Commander Colonel Robert West he had a far larger force with him. And a rear attack by Confederate cavalry had arrived on the scene just after the battle began, allowed the rebels to maintain their hold on the area. Casualties amounted for about 150 for both sides of the battle, and the local bridge and railroad were preserved. These days, several key spots associated with the Battle of Staunton Bridge are said to be haunted. There's the usual residual haunted happenings at the battlegrounds. You can hear the sounds of gunshots and shouts, but that's the least of the paranormal activity in the area. Spirit of a Union soldier reported to roam Mary Baldwin College. A ghost that's dubbed the Euro Peril haunts the Virginia Military Institute. And Confederate apparitions have been seen at the Lafayette Inn and the Selma House. And if that's not enough, the area known as the Wharf, as well as Staunton's train depot, is said to be crawling with ghosts. The most notable of those seems to be the ghost of Myrtle Ruth Knox, who was killed in a train accident that demolished the depot in 1890. Time doesn't seem to have much meaning for ghosts. Well, we also have the Battle of Saltville in Saltville, Virginia. Truth be told, there are actually two battles at the town of Saltville during the Civil War. First occurred October 2, 1864, when Union Brigadier General Stephen Burridge attempted to raid and take the salt works. Confederates won despite being severely outmatched, but their victory would be marred by the horrible incident now known as the Saltville Massacre. Several of the units fighting for the North in this battle were black cavalry soldiers, and when they were forced to surrender, many of them were taken captive. That's when the notorious Southern leader Champ Ferguson took matters into his own hand and executed many of the African-American soldiers and even some of the Caucasian troops to boot. He was angry at the fact that they had come so deeply into their territory. Ferguson was tried, convicted, and executed following the war because of the massacre, as he should have been. A couple of months later, the town of Saltville again fell under fire December 20, 1864, when General George Stoneman made another attempt to take the saltworks. This time, the town was defended by Colonel Robert Preston, but the federal force was too much the second time around. They took the town and destroyed the saltworks. There were over 500 casualties in both battles. Seems they were a lively sort indeed. During reenactments of the Battle of Saltville, it said the spirits of the dead like to join in. And those who participate in the events claim to see ghostly soldiers joining them on the field and hear the whiz of bullets go by. They even hear weapons being fired that aren't part of the show. So if you hear a reenactment taking part in Saltville, Virginia, you may want to swing by. You never know what you're going to see or hear. On that note, we're going to come to the end of tonight's show. We've run out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. And once again, we'll be talking about the ghost of the American Civil War. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.